Sorry for the bait and switch. If anything, it's not really bait and switch because I like this one better than the other one. So, and also, I apologize in advance for the homotopy theories because I'm going to do egregious things like putting objects in categories and setting categories equal to each other. But it's going to be okay. Okay, so well, the setting is that I have some new results on the space of Bridgeland stability conditions on Fukaya categories of surfaces. So I'm going to first define these two things. So von Bridgeland, supposedly inspired by some work on stability of brains in physics, he defined this notion of a stability condition on a triangulated category. So this thing is sort of a, it should be thought of as a refinement of a T-structure, perhaps. And it's composed of two pieces of data. So the first one is this thing called a central charge function. It is a function on the growth and degree group of a category, valid in complex numbers. And the other piece of data is a slicing piece sub phi, where each piece of phi is a full triangulated subcategory of D. With these conditions, that the central charge, sorry, I forgot to put a condition, but central charge is basically of phase phi of an object X of phase phi, if that object is a semi-stable object of phase phi. This slicing behaves well with respect to the shift in the category D. Another thing is that there's no Homs between semi-stable objects of bigger phase to semi-stable objects of smaller phase. And the last condition is that every object in the category can be expressed as an iterated extension of semi-stable objects. So all these A's are semi-stable objects, and then they have decreasing phases. Right? So one example of such thing in the inspiration is if you have some smooth projective curve X over C, then you can look at the category, which is the bounded derived category of X. And you can write down a function of an, let's say, object. So for some coherent sheaf E, you can write down this function that's minus the degree of this plus I rank of this. Right? So the slope of this thing is degree over rank, or minus degree over rank. And then you get the usual notion of slope stability for bundles, right? There's no a semi-stable bundle, something that doesn't have bundles of bigger slope inside of it. So under this stability condition, what does the category looks like? At least the heart of this category, it has, so over here at, you know, on this line I, like, imaginary particles I has all the line bundles here of the rank one and the degree here, so it's like O and like O of one, O of two, and over here you have the skyscraper sheaf, etc. So the point of this the definition is
M?
Sorry. M?
M of X.
Oh yeah, so M is a positive number. Yeah, you're just saying it's along that ray. Because Z is valued in complex numbers, right? So it's just saying it's along is a phase. It should be like the mass of the object.
Okay.
Oh, but for now, first it's just going to be some positive number. Yeah, I forgot to write it down. Sorry. Right. So he proved in this paper where he defined that this set of all stability conditions has a structure of a complex manifold. And if you forget the slicing and just remember the central charge, you get this map. There's some technicality involving like infinite dimensionality, but anyways, this thing is a local homeomorphism. So this is a complex manifold model on this complex vector space. And just for some examples, in that paper he proves that if you have an elliptic curve, the space of stability conditions on the coherent sheaves is this is the universal cover of GL2 plus.
Plus means connected.
Yes, means. In further papers, other people prove for other curves, for example, for P1, is c squared. And one thing that we're going to care a lot about is the stability condition on modules over the AN quiver. And that's also going to be CN. So I'm going to discuss this a little more detail. So you can, for the AN quiver, you have, let's say we're doing the A3 quiver, right? So you have this category. It's denote like this. The sitting inside. So this is the usual category. It sits inside of the, let's say, derived category as a heart of a T structure. And the simple objects here, you can just say is like rank one supported in each point, right? So you can imagine that locally looks like you're picking three complex numbers for the phases of these objects. It turns out that's, CN, the local model of it is also, the whole manifold is also isomorphic to CN. Anyways, this space carries some interesting actions of given by some rotation of the central charge and by automorphism of D.
Should I be bothered by the fact that GL2 of R is 3 real dimensional and so definitely not complex? It's
4 dimensional.
Okay,
yeah. It's 4 dimensional. Yeah, the action is transitive, too. Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyways, so that's for one kind of object. Now defining the other concept, the Foucault category of the surfaces. So let me define what a Marx surface is, and it's going to be something like this. So it's a surface. It has boundary, and each boundary has markings on it. So the shaded part will be the marked part. And the dotted part would be the unmarked boundary component. So this surface, like I'm just putting here things that are allowed. So you're allowed to have a component that's entirely marked. You'll have genus, etc. And there's many ways of defining the partially wrapped Foucault category, but we're going to use, I forgot to put the names. But most of this paper is about, most of this work is following on Hayden, Kontsevich, and Kurtsarkov's work, and that's going to be this acronym. I should have written it down. So the way to define it, at least the way they do it, is you first pick a full system of arcs on the surface. So this is a bunch of arcs. They have to include all the arcs isotopic to unmarked components, boundary components. They go from marked boundary components to unmarked boundary components. And they're full because they cut up the surface in polygons. So it's easy to see on this side. You should really follow what's happening on the genus here. It also cuts into polygons. And you associate an infinity category, and the objects are the arcs. The morphisms, the mu2 morphisms, are given by boundary paths between the arcs. So whenever they share a marked boundary component, you go from one to the other, keeping the surface to the right. So you pick some sort of direction to go. And of course, the higher morphisms are given by polygons. And you define the Foucault category of the surface with the markings to be twisted complexes over that category. And you can prove that's independent of the choice of full system of arcs. So that's going to be the category that we're going to be looking at. So I forgot to cite the names too, but this is a theorem also of Hayden, Kurtsarkov, Kontsevich, HKK, in their paper. And they prove the geometricity result that even though you're taking these twisted complexes, every indecomposable object of this category can be represented by an isotopic class of a Mears curve with a local system on it. So you can sort of guess how you're gonna get a curve like this. You're gonna get those arcs that you saw over here, and you're gonna extend them one to the next one until you get the curve that you want. And depending on the extension that you choose,
What does twisted complex mean here?
Well, it means in the sense of Kapranov. Well, it's a twisted complex. It's like you choose a bunch of objects, and you take like the direct sum, for example. Well, first you take like all the shifts, then a twisted complex is like a pair of a sum of like a bunch of objects and a differential, right?
On the
a differential like on this object.
Okay.
So differential, yeah.
Okay, like a square zero and one.
Yeah, so it's like a triangulated completion.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Anyways, you can think of a triangulated completion. Right. So the main theorem of this paper is that if you look in this category, there's two suitables here, but it has to be very suitable. But a suitable choice of quadratic differential on the surface determines a stability condition on this Foucaille category. So what's a quadratic differential? Well, it's what it always was. It's something that looks locally like a holomorphic or meromorphic function of z times dz squared. And this is something that defines a horizontal foliation by taking the real directions, right? So if you have, if you just have dz squared, right, the real directions, if you think about which vectors are paired with itself to be real, it's going to be the horizontal ones. So just some examples of what this looks like. Around the smooth point, the real directions look like this, right? Let's say this is my origin, right? Around something that's either a simple pole or a zero, you get an angular defect like this, right? So this is a picture for n equals 1, right? For a simple zero, you get this like angular defect of pi, and you get higher angular defect for higher zeros, and for higher poles, you get something that looks like this. So it's not like you have angular defects, you just have like an infinite area if you calculate the area of this thing. We're not going to be looking at these actually, so we're going to forget about those in a while. And the more crazy ones, which are going to be important for us, is around something that's an essential singularity that looks like this. So what is this picture supposed to tell you? Each one of these wedges that I drew is this thing. So it's like a half plane that you're gluing along. So if you look at what this horizontal foliation looks around the singularity, it's like infinitely many half planes glued. And in this case, n for me is 2, and And in fact, you get you can prove that you get n plus 1 sort of accumulation points and some metric completion. So there's some reason why I drew like three sets of them. You should think of it as three times infinitely many half planes glued together. And so we're not going to be looking at these singularities. Instead, we're going to blow them up. And I don't know if you can see it, but here, this whole thing is marked, this whole thing is unmarked. And this has marked, like three marked parts exactly around these parts. And what I mean by doing these markings is that this is exactly the suitable condition that allows you to match the quadratic differential to the stability condition, right? So remember how before we had this the surface that had some marked parts and some unmarked parts? So the way to use their paper to give a stability condition is you find a quadratic differential that has singularities at those, when you collapse those boundary components, it has exactly the kind of singularity that matches what you originally had.
Did I want at the upper right? Did you really mean z to the n?
Z to the minus n, sorry. Yeah. Z to the minus n.
But only for z to the minus, right?
No, they all have infinite area.
And on the bottom one, you really mean kind of infinitely many?
Yeah. Infinitely many domains, yeah. It's like an infinite area, infinite angle singularity, cone singularity. In the triple dots. There's more. They're just packed together. I can make a better drawing by hand if you want later. But I'm
probably doing it for pi pre. It's only like that for n equals to minus 2.
N equals to minus 2. What does she look for n equals minus 3? The more complicated paths, yeah.
It's like for z to the minus
5, we have them accumulating along.
I see, accumulating
some finite number,
yeah, some finite number of points. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So getting
thinner and thinner or something? Well, they all have planes. Yeah. So I'm sorry, but the reason why this one might be inaccurate is because in like two slides I'm gonna rule those out because my result's not about those. But yeah, maybe the picture is not accurate. I just wanted to say it's definitely like infinite area when you take the metric under the quadratic differential. So this quadratic differential gives a surface a structure of a flat surface. So locally it looks like this. You have some piece of the surface, it looks flat, and then it runs into some singularity, and there's like more half planes glued along these wedges. So this picture tells you how this quadratic differential var phi gives you a stability condition. So the central charge function is given by period map. So there's an isomorphism, or at least a map in some more general cases between the Grothendieck group and some relative H1. And you can integrate a square root of this thing. The reason why there's this local system, Z local system, is so you can integrate the square root. But anyways, there's a period map. And the stable objects of phase phi are the unbroken geodesics of slope phi. So in this case, like in this patch, these are the stable objects. They're just like straight lines going from one singularity to another. Okay.
What's the subscript R in the coefficients of the homology group?
Oh, it's tau. It's some particular local system, Z local system that they define on sigma. Yeah. It has to do with is the orientation double cover of this line field. Yeah. But it's not gonna be too important for us, yeah.
What is M?
M is the marked boundary. Yeah, I don't know why I wrote it here, but oh no, it is relative. It's relative homology to M. Yeah. Right, so there's the theorem that the map from the moduli space of quadratic differentials suitably with suitable singularities to the stability space is a homeomorphism to union of connected components. So for an example, this is a very simple example. Take a disk, with like n marked components on the boundary. And a quadratic differential that gives this has some essential singularity at infinity. And you can get a map from Cn to this moduli space of quadratic differentials by taking exponential of this polynomial, right? And then you can prove this thing actually hits the whole space. Or they prove it. So some new results is we're going to call those stability conditions that we got from using that procedure HAK stability conditions. And in my upcoming work, I prove this the whole story in some cases. So the condition is that assume that sigma is fully stopped, which means every boundary circle has at least one marked component and one unmarked component. So they're all sort of mixed type, right? In Foucault category language, it means that it's stopped along every boundary. With an asterisk, we can talk about it later, but assuming that, then all the stability conditions are HAK stability conditions. And this is actually homeomorphism onto the whole space. It's sort of hard to see how you would do this without having a global picture of this. But the way to do this is we develop a notion of a relative stability condition, which I'm going to define soon, which behaves sort of like a cosheaf. And the asterisk is that as for now, we need to assume that at least one boundary has more than two marked components. But I think that's not essential. Before we define an important lemma, which is fix the stability condition. Don't assume that it's an HAK. Fix some random stability condition. You don't know anything about it. The one lemma is that any stable object is either an embedded circle or an embedded interval. So remember how in their geometricity result, every indecomposable object was an immersed curve. I can prove that none of the stable objects under stability condition have any essential self-intersections. if they have some representative that do, then they all can be canceled out, right? And another lemma in a similar vein is that the Hardener Simha filtration of any object looks like a chain of intervals. So what is this filtration? Remember in the beginning we had this like decomposition of every object into the semi-stables. We can prove that all those are stable intervals and they all are linked together in a chain. And that's isotopic to the original object. So that's gonna become important in very soon. And so now for the definition is let's define a relative stability condition in this case. So suppose you have a surface, sigma, and you have an arc, gamma, that's isotopic to unmarked boundary components. So here's gamma in red. Right, so gamma is isotopic to this unmarked boundary component. A relative stability condition on this category, on this pair category, gamma, is a stability condition on an extended category where what I do is I attach a disk along gamma. So in this case, it's a disk with four marked boundaries. And I pick a stability condition on this surface now. There's a minimality condition that every marked component here needs to appear in the this decomposition of this object. So for example, it can look like this, right? This chain hits every marked component of this like added delta part. And then there's a notion of when you have two surfaces like sigma L and sigma R, we're going to define when two relative stability conditions compatible, and they're compatible when, sort of the picture looks the same, meaning the decomposition of gamma has the same number of stable objects, they're all arranged in the same in a sequence with the same central charges. So basically, they have to be compatible along the decomposition of gamma. Okay. So now for the main lemmas is fix the stability condition, I forgot to put stab, but sigma in the stability space of this category, anything, and pick an embedded interval, cutting the surface into two, right? From sigma, we can construct the relative stability conditions on the left side of gamma and on the right side of gamma that are compatible. And if you start from compatible stability conditions, relative stability conditions, you can glue and get an ordinary stability condition on the whole thing. So how does this work? So for the cutting procedure, so this is my surface sigma, and I have some red gamma here. You have a stability condition sigma on the surface, little sigma, and you first use it to decompose it into the stable components, right? Then you look at this, and then you divide it into two by adding these like delta n's that you had to add. So in this case, you're adding a disk with four marked components, and on this side, you're adding a disk with three marked components. Basically, so you can fit the decomposition of gamma into this, and then you can prove that by using some other lemmas that you can restrict the stability condition to stability conditions on this side, on this surface, and on this surface, right? As for gluing, is sort of a reverse procedure, but the way you start is you say, well, gamma really defines this category as a categorical pushout of the category on the left and the category on the right, and these are all fully faithful pushouts, so all these maps are fully faithful embeddings. And if you have compatible stability conditions, you can express this category as a separate kind of pushout, where in the middle, instead of having the category generated by the one object, you have the category generated by all the stable parts, which is this thing. And now you see you already have a stability condition here and a stability condition here, so you might be able to put them together. And that's how you do it. For the central charge, using this pushout, you can express any object here in terms of an object in the category of tilde sigma L on the left side, on the right side, and an isomorphism between basically the restriction to the middle, so the right adjoint. And you define the central charge by sort of an obvious formula, which is just add the central charges of the left, the right side, and then subtract the correction term, which is the charge of the middle object. So you define this function. You don't know if it works yet. And then you define the slicing. So to define the slicing, you first include into the as a semi-stable object of phase phi, all the semi-stable objects of phase phi coming from the left side and the right side. And then you also include the separate class of objects. We come from what I call lozenges. So these lozenges are arrangements of objects like this, right? So here, sigma L is to this side, sigma R is to this side. And they're chains of the sort of chains of objects that look like this. And such that their phase, if you plot their phase on the plane, they form this sort of like curvy rhombus shape. And when they form this shape, I also include into my list of stable object of semi-stable objects, stable objects, the interval going from here to here. Right. So I want this lozenge to be unobstructed in the sense that there's a line inside of the bounded by the phases that corresponds to this object. This is an unobstructed lozenge, and this is an obstructed one. This is a bad one, so we don't include that object, right? So the idea is that if you knew you started with the stability condition given by quadratic differentials, then you would, of course, expect this object to be there, right? And because this is an unbroken geodesic, while this object is not unbroken, right? Then it comes to proving that even if you don't have an HAK stability condition, you recover everything that you should in order to get a non-stability condition. But anyway, so we prove that these procedures of cutting and gluing are inverse to each other, which means that you can express all the stability conditions of a surface by cutting into simple pieces and then understanding each simple piece. But there's a technicality which is we can only do this when gamma cuts the surface into two. I don't know how to do it if you cut, like, let's say an annulus into a disk, right? It might be possible, but for now I need to have at least one boundary component that I'm gonna draw very big here, and I can make many cuts along, like, from the boundary component to another marked piece of the same boundary component. And the surface is getting cut into pieces, one piece that looks like a disk with many marked parts of the boundary and possibly many, many annuli like this. And then possibly many like punctured tori. Right? So every surface you can sort of draw it in this way topologically, and then you can make these cuts. So you need to in the end analyze three kinds of pieces. So one of them is the disk with the marked boundary components, and we know what the stability space of this thing is. It's just Cn. The other one is the annulus, and the category is equivalent to modules over the affine A p plus one curve, where p is the number of components on the boundary, and we also know what the stability space is. And another case is this punctured torus with two marked boundary components, which is not too complicated of a category. And by similar, it's modules over this quiver up to derived equivalence. And we can prove that the stability space of this is connected and is given by HAK stability conditions. So as long as you can cut your surface down to these three kinds of things, then HAK stability condition is the whole story. I think I'm getting to the end. So there's some open questions, which is, well, these are more direct questions, is that do we really need three base cases? Can I cut it down? I mean, ideally, I'd like to cut it down to disks, right? But I don't know if I can do that. can we say something about non-fully stopped categories? There's some sort of localization that HAK do that I don't know how to do the same. And the main technical question is, what can be said in those cases, sorry, that's bad, in more general cases about the category span by the stable pieces of an object? Right, so remember that all the way back, we had this lemma that every object decomposes into a chain of objects, right? And I know what the category span by a chain is modules over AN. In a more general categorical pushout, what can I say about the category span by the stable pieces? And that would be necessary to know to generalize this to other cases. And then these are questions that also open speculations that I'm going to write on the board here. So one open, one speculation is when we cut our surface, we ended up with discs, annulus, and punctured torus, right? The disc doesn't have any sort of objects with let's say non-trivial local system, right? Everything is just intervals. The annulus has a circle going around it that has a local system with a monodromy, and the annulus has the punctured torus has two of them. So if this is my stability space of the chi category of sigma, right, there is a locus inside of here. Let's say pick a loop L, let's say around, pick loops Li around either annulus or punctured or genus in the punctured torus. So there's a space here, let's say stab Li, which is the stability conditions for which these loops are stable, right? And inside of here, you have this chart. Not inside of here, but pick a stability condition here, right? And consider the moduli of stable objects. So stable objects under sigma, right? So inside of here, you have a chart where the C star is the monodromy of, let's say, rank one local systems around these loops, right? I don't know what this chart is, or I don't know of why this should be the case. But one example that I know how to do is if you take, for example, this very simple case, which is the annulus with one and one mark components. So the Foucault category of this thing is mirrored to coherent sheaves on P1, right? And in this case, you can pick a stability condition, sigma, such that this loop is stable. And then you get you can say, under the stability condition, what's the moduli of stable objects? It turns out there's going to be P1, and this chart is just C star inside of here. So in general, you should get some like toric chart instead of the moduli that I don't know how to understand. But I guess that's my time. Thank you.
Questions? So identifying pushouts of categories mm-hmm. is generally hard, even when you're taking pushouts of fully functors.
Mm-hmm.
What techniques in particular?
What techniques I use in this case? There's two ways of doing it. One way is by really using the geometricity of the objects. So this way, you know, they prove that this Foucault category is a co-sheaf over some skeleton. So the way to do one way you could do this is if you have, so you're talking about this pushout, the second pushout, right? This thing like is like identifying this as a category, a Foucault category of part of the skeleton, that's inside of this other two skeleton, and then you can just plug it into that result.
Does that not also apply then to the case that you said was harder, where you're not splitting?
It does, yeah. But the problem with that is not the categorical pushout. Is that so you can even see here. For example, suppose you're trying to like. Let's see. Let's write this like this. This should be the cut along here, right? I personally don't know how to reconstruct this object from objects on the disk. Yeah, I mean, it's possible that I'm just missing something simple, but I don't know how to do it yet. So it's not a problem with the pushout. Yeah. And another way of identifying that you have a pushout in this case is by thinking of your fully faithful pushout as giving a semi-orthogonal decomposition of the category, and that also works. Yeah.
Other questions? Let's thank the speaker again.